You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
What's up, everybody, and welcome to episode 265 of the Talking Chop podcast. I am your host, Brad Roland. It is Sunday afternoon, and I am joined for the first time in far too long, and that is my fault, by Joe Lucia. Are you the managing editor of Awful Announcing? Is that your title? Something like that?
Something like that, yeah.
We'll go with that. Man in charge of Awful Announcing and other places?
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Perfect. Well, thank you for joining me, sir. You've been on this podcast multiple times before, but here we are. It's been kind of a quiet week, actually. The last time anything happened for the Braves, Scott and Eric did an emergency podcast without me on Drew Smyly, and we'll talk about him a little bit in a second. But other than that, it's been kind of quiet. So I guess we can quickly just mention that Kyle Muller is on the 40-man now, avoiding Rule 5 disaster there. And the Braves also claimed a man named Jack Mayfield off waivers. And you and I were talking about this before we started recording. I had never heard of Jack Mayfield in my life until that happened. So I don't know.
Yeah, I know nothing about Jack Mayfield, and I would not be surprised if he is in a different organization come spring training.
Yeah, I mean, this is a 30-year-old utility guy who hasn't really hit in the majors at all. He does have minor league options, which people pointed out, if they wanted to just have a guy for depth that they could send up and down. I don't know. I have nothing on that. It's just a guy that the Braves acquired and had to announce, so we had to talk about it for a second.
It kind of seems like a Mike Fast acquisition, since he used to be in the Astros organization for so many years. But who really knows? Who really cares? I don't think Jack Mayfield is going to play much of a role in the 2021 Braves. But hey, if I'm wrong, I will gladly eat crow.
Yeah, I'm with you on that 100%. So with that, with those news things out of the way, and to the extent that they actually were news, we haven't talked in this space in a while. I've talked to you a little bit, but I want to go all the way back to the playoffs and the run the Braves made and kind of just get where your head is on this whole thing. So what was your sort of takeaway from the run they made to the NLCS, and how do you feel coming out of that as a someone who observes the Braves closely?
I mean, the NLCS run itself was magical, but the way it ended left me so angry and disappointed and disheartened, like I think a lot of us were feeling. And in all honesty, I didn't really have the whole like moral victory vibe that it seemed like a lot of us did, because I mean, different year, same thing. The Braves made the playoffs and lost to a far better team. And the teams they actually beat in the playoffs this year, shock and awe, wouldn't have made the playoffs last year under the old five team per league format. So while it's still a playoff series win and playoff consecutive game victories and all that kind of thing, I mean, are we really going to look back over series wins over the Reds and Marlins and think of it as like the golden era? I really don't think so. And man, we really need to get the bar higher going forward, and hopefully we'll be able to do that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a pessimist by nature, as everyone probably knows that's listening to this and it's probably laughing right now. I think it's good. I think it's good / okay to be like happy that they finally won a playoff series. Like that matters. It was weird circumstances, but they at least won a playoff series. They actually won two, and that's a good thing. But it was kind of hard to swallow. I mean, and I said this at the time, and I'll say it again now. Like, you know, the way it ended was pretty brutal in a lot of ways. Now, I guess, granted, you lost to a team that was really good that ended up winning the World Series. Maybe that lightens the load a little bit. But it also makes it to where, like, you were also an inning or two from beating that team. So maybe that's even more frustrating.
Yeah, and those, like, last three games, like, the way they lost, especially, I want to say it was game, either 6 or 7, they had. It was something like the last 20 of 21 hitters were retired with only like one guy reaching base. It was like, I mean, at least go down with some fight, man. At least go down swinging. At least go down not just rolling over for the team that's been crowned for the last however many years in the National League and hasn't been able to get it done with a World Series. And just the way that the Braves decided to not at least like make competitive is what killed me in those last three games.
For sure. So coming out of that, obviously there's the pandemic and there's financial uncertainty and there is the whole league-wide concern about how the contract stuff is going to go. And we've seen some deals made to this point in time. I know you cover the whole league as well. I mean, what do you make of this whole situation? Like, are teams going to spend money? Are the guys at the top going to get squeezed? I mean, starting pitching seems to be okay between Drew Smyly and some of the other ones. Those guys got paid a little bit. So that's not that big of a concern. But where are you at in this whole market right now? Because it's been pretty quiet.
I think it's going to be a lot like we've seen the last couple of years, where the elite guys, the guys at the top, the guys like Springer and Bauer, guys like that, they'll get paid, but it's kind of the guys in the middle to lower end that may find things a little tough. Like, you look at someone like, looking at free agents now to see if there's anyone that actually like meets my criteria, and it's very difficult. Look at someone like Brett Gardner. How about Brett Gardner? He's in his mid to late 30s. He's a guy who is like still a viable major league player, but he's not a star. Do we really think someone like Brett Gardner is going to be able to get like a multi-year big money deal like he may have gotten in previous years? I really don't think so, and I think that the trickle-down effect is going to affect guys that like would, you know, normally easily get bench spots, like Matt Joyce, Mark Reynolds, guys like that. I mean, we know the Mark Reynolds story from, I think it was last winter, where he allegedly got three identical offers on the exact same day after no calls. I think a lot of those kind of, I don't want to call them org players, but the guys that are more depth pieces, I think they'll have struggles, while the top of the line guys won't really have any issues getting paid.
Yeah, and that makes sense. I think that's kind of the trickle down effect that it might have if teams are trying to maybe cut salary across the board. And the Braves, as everybody knows is listening to this podcast, are this weird situation where they're owned by a corporation, not a family or a person. So they can do different things. It's kind of a challenge trying to figure out where they're going to draw the line. They have spent a little bit so far. Obviously, the one signing that I want to ask you about is Drew Smyly. And that was a surprise to some fans. And, you know, there was lots of reactions to that, positive, negative, also just some maybe overreactions on how it impacts payroll. But they gave him real money. So what's your reaction to that, both like in terms of just Smyly in particular, and also what it does for the rest of the offseason for the Braves?
With Smyly, I feel like I felt at the trade deadline last year, which is not a good thing, and last offseason, where it depends on what else comes. If Smyly is like the move, I mean, I'm going to be a lot less negative about it. Whereas if he is the first of like several moves to help bolster the pitching staff and the offense as a whole, I'll feel a lot better about it. In other words, if Drew Smyly is like the Tommy Malone of this offseason, the one guy, I'm really not going to like it. Whereas if he's the Will Smith, one of several key parts, I'll feel a lot more positively about the signing.
Yeah, so I wasn't on the show when we reacted to it. I think it's totally fine. I'm with you on this. I think that's not like the only piece they need in the rotation. I was on record as saying that I would sign multiple arms before this all started. I know they have the young guys as well. It's good to have depth, but I thought that they needed at least two more. This is one of them, you would assume. Smyly, you know, was really good this year in a very, very small sample size. He's been good in the past. Before that, he was like pretty excellent. Maybe not excellent. He was very good in like 2014 as a starter. Same with 2015 with the Rays. He had some pretty good numbers there. Lost his way a little bit from there. But I think the talent, at least what he put on film, if you want to say, in 2020 was pretty good. They're clearly buying into some of the changes he's made. His spin rate's up, his velocity's up, all that stuff that I could probably not be qualified to get into as much as everybody else would be. But I do think that they're buying on him. The price is maybe a little higher than everyone would want, but it's a one-year deal. And there's usually a one-year deal tax in some ways. And also, I think, personally, the Braves like to do these deals where no one else can bid, and they can just announce it themselves, and maybe they're paying an extra $1 million just to have this be done and make sure they have a guy that they can sort of build with now. And that's just my own theory, but it just seems like Anthopoulos likes to do these kind of very quick out-of-the-gates one-year deals, and that gives you flexibility elsewhere.
Yeah, they do get out of the door pretty quick. We saw it with Smith last year. We saw it with, I believe, it was Donaldson the year before, and the Brian McCann deal.
I say Brian McCann and Donaldson within like 3 hours one day. It was just like, yeah. Okay.
And I think the Ozuna one last year was also pretty quick. So I'm really kind of hoping that we get something else in the next week or two. So once these other guys start coming off the market, we're not left in a situation where the Braves have to consider someone like a Felix Hernandez, like last year, where a guy like that coming in would be, you know, like fine as like a minor league potential depth signing. But if he is one of the guys you're looking at to like really bolster your rotation, that would be a little hedgy for me. Brett Anderson, I do not want any part of a guy like Brett Anderson, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, so I mean, I was going to ask you in general, like, who are some guys you have your eye on? So while we're here on the rotation, is there anybody that you think the Braves, you know, could/should take a look at right now, knowing that they're probably not going to go too crazy, considering they have the guys coming back that are young, plus Smiley? Are there names on your radar for the rotation that you would be looking at specifically, or is it just kind of like who's the best value and sign that guy?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it is about value, and I mean, you can immediately take them out of the running for guys like Paxton and Tanaka, and even someone like Taijuan Walker, who doesn't have a long track record but has a lot of potential and I think is going to have a lot of suitors. I would really like to look at someone like Mike Minor, who was not really good last year but has shown flashes when he was with the Rangers. I don't know if he's going to get a ton of interest this offseason after the way things kind of cratered for him after he got traded back to the A's, but I think he could be a nice piece. And then there are like lower tier guys that might interest me a little more, like Mike Fiers. He's a guy that can eat innings and do that job pretty well that would really kind of fit the mold of what the Braves are looking for. And maybe even someone like Gio Gonzalez, same kind of guy, old, shouldn't be that expensive, but can still get the job done.
Yeah. I think that Minor, obviously former Brave, so that's more interesting for some people. He wasn't good last year. He was really good the year before in Texas through 208 innings and was like a pretty high end option. Somewhere in between there is what he probably is in real life, if healthy. But you know, by the way, Joe, you and I are old. Mike Minor will be 32 pretty soon. No, well, sorry, we'll be 33 pretty soon. That is crazy. I remember like being very cognizant of Mike Minor being drafted in the first round, and Mike Minor will be 33 years old pretty soon. So, just saying.
I remember the days when Mike Minor was drafted. That was like the first full season of me running my own Braves blog, and I was very angry because I wanted the Braves, instead of taking Mike Minor, to take Tyler Matzek instead.
Wow, full circle.
And now Tyler Matzek is part of the Braves bullpen, and Mike Minor is a guy that maybe the Braves will sign as a free agent. So pretty funny how the world works.
And Tyler Matzek was awesome this year. So there you go. You're vindicated after all this time.
Anyone who knows me for a long time knows I've been beating the Tyler Matzek drum for 10 plus years now. So seeing him succeed this year just made me really happy.
Yeah, it's all coming back around. I agree with you on that list. I think, you know, guys, who else have we not mentioned? Oh, I want to ask you about two guys because they keep getting linked to the Braves either by guessing or by like semi intel. And they're two old guys who used to be good, and they are Adam Wainwright and John Lester. Do you have any interest in either of those guys? Because I feel like of all the, I almost don't want to use the word reporting, all the people that are reporters talking about like ideas, you hear those guys a lot.
I think Lester's washed. I want nothing to do with him. As for Wainwright, selfishly for work, I'd like to see him retire because he was a really good announcer. But if he decided to take a one-year deal with the Braves, I think it could work out, though I do think there is some kind of meltdown potential like that Tom Glavine contract 10 years ago. So a little bit of a wait-and-see thing there. But, you know, if it's like 1 year, $3 or $4 million, I mean, why not? We'll see what happens.
Yeah, it wouldn't be the worst idea for a year. He's old, but we'll see. I just feel like those are guys that we get asked about a lot to weigh in on, and they both have local ties in some ways. And Wainwright, he's maybe going to retire. Lester might have to force to be retired if he doesn't have a market. So we'll see how that all goes, but I wanted to make sure that I asked you about those guys specifically. We could pivot a little bit now to the offensive side because – there was a quote, well, I guess there was a phrase used by Mark Bowman that I wanted to point out. Bowman wrote this week that, and I'm quoting now, "I get the sense the growing assumption is NL teams will be indeed using the DH again in 2021, end quote. So that's a guess, of course, but there's a little bit of buzz about the DH coming. We don't know, unless you do, Joe, and want to break some news. I don't know, anyway, about the DH, but that impacts a lot, too, that, especially guys like Marcell Ozuna, of course, incumbent Braves DH. But is that part of the reason maybe you think that some of these guys are waiting that might have other options? Like, Ozuna is like the most number one example of this, but there are other guys, too, that might be, I would say, smartly waiting for some word on this. And by the way, it's crazy to me that they would go into the free agency and not have the answer to this, but here we are.
Yeah, I mean, first off, I fully agree with you. It's completely insane that we are like a month into the offseason and teams still don't know the rules for next year. That doesn't seem very helpful when it comes to roster construction. But I do know for a fact that there are some guys holding out on seeing what happens. Like Nelson Cruz, he's 40. He is a DH and nothing but. If the NL has the DH, his potential market doubles in teams, so that would be huge for a guy like him. And obviously Marcell Ozuna, if the DH is expanded to the NL full-time next year, not only is a team like the Braves going to be a much better fit for him, but other teams where he might not be a fit right now will look at him as a more viable option, and that will in turn boost his market and potentially his salary along with it. So hopefully we get that done by the winter meetings, which are in, I believe, 2 weeks. But with the way baseball operates, really not sure on a time frame for that.
And the winter meetings are also virtual, so maybe that won't have the same juicing effect on the market as it often does. I mean, they're going to happen, but you know this. A lot of those deals happen because guys are in the same hotel hanging out and talking all day long. And now they're going to have meetings on Zoom, but I'm not sure if that's going to be like the pivot point that we always see. Maybe it will be still. I don't know.
I'm not sure if this is also going to make the leak situation better or worse than usual, since, you know, reporters just can't hound agents and players in the lobby.
Famously, hanging out in the lobby all day for 4 days straight, every reporter in the world.
Absolutely. Just trying to get a scoop on where Jack Mayfield's going to be signing.
Well said. So I asked you that about the DH, too, in part because of Ozuna. And, you know, he's interesting. I have been on my island saying that the Braves should still consider signing Ozuna even without the DH. And part of the reason I say that is because the DH seems to be, everyone is assuming it's going to be back in 22 regardless. And I think his defense is not good, but isn't so bad where you'd have to just cross him off entirely. Do you agree with me or am I crazy?
I agree with you, if only for the fact that last offseason they signed Ozuna without the possibility of the DH.
That's the point I make too, all the time. People think I'm crazy. Oh, I'm so glad to hear you say that. It's very
exciting. Clearly they weren't that concerned about his defense a year ago. And I mean, yeah, in the 3 month season or whatever it was this year, his defense left a lot to be desired. But at the same time, his offense more than made up for it. He was absolutely incredible. And even if the NL doesn't adopt the DH next year, I mean, getting a bat like that back in the lineup will be huge and so much more beneficial than getting a better glove like Inciarte or a guy who I mentioned earlier, someone like a Brett Gardner, who is like all glove and minimal bat.
Yeah, and, you know, it's interesting. I think everyone knows that they would rather have him be the DH. I made the point that you've made as well, but I will say the Braves clearly think less of his defense after seeing it up close and personal. Even back to spring training, you were getting buzz in spring training that they were not thrilled with the defense. I think it was worse than they thought it was going to be. The arm especially is just apparently just gone forever now, which is not great. So I did want to ask you, though, if let's assume the DH is in. Let's assume we know the DH is in and they find that out in the next couple of weeks. What is the number on Marcell Ozuna, years, dollars, whatever you want to put it, where you would not want him to be back with the Braves? Like, what's the pain number for you where you would be like, you know what, go ahead, Marcell?
Anything more than 4 years. I think that's really kind of the, I do not want a five, or I don't even know if 6 year deals are even going to exist this offseason, but nothing more than four. And I'd say, like, I don't know, average value of like $20 million is probably too high for me. I could see going like 354, something like that, I think would be perfect. But like, if you're talking like 366, I think that would be a little too excessive for me.
So at that number, so, you know, $22 million a year, 3 years is too much for you. What about, like, I'm not sure this is going to be the case because of his age, but in the market, what about if it was like 4 for $72? Is that too long and big for you to want to do it?
I think that's like the upper limit for me.
Okay.
I would do it, but I mean, if another team beats it, it's no, I'm not countering.
Yeah, I've been trying to think about this myself, which is part of the reason why I'm asking. Like, what is the number where I'm going to come on this podcast and not like the deal? And I think it might be like 480 would be too much. Even then, I wouldn't criticize it because that just shows that they're actually going to spend some money, which is nice, probably. But even, you know, just realistically, value wise, and baseball is hard. I mean, you know this, but I cover basketball where value contracts really, really matter because you have to match salary and there's a soft salary cap, all this stuff. In baseball, the money matters, but it only matters if your team ownership wants it to matter, because you could just buy everybody if you wanted to. It's not, it's just weird to me. That's the nuances are there. Like, fans always get upset if a deal is too much money in their mind, but you got to tell me why that is. Like, if you're worried about it impacting the rest of the roster, that's a concern. But if it's just about money, then it's not your money.
Yeah, and you also have to realize the Braves are in a very advantageous payroll situation after this year. I mean, yeah, they still need to get a possible Freeman extension done, which is going to cost probably at least $100 million for however many years. But aside from that, I mean, there's no one on this roster really making money aside from Acuna when his big extension really goes into effect in 2022. And after that, I mean, you have his deal and you have the Albies deal, which is for peanuts, and that's really not a lot of money at all. So if you have to sign Ozuna for $18-20 million a year, it's not going to like eat up every last cent of your budget.
Yeah, I'm looking at the roster sort of salary paid right now in FanGraphs, and for 2023, the Braves have three guys right now who are under contract beyond arbitration numbers. It's, as you said, it's Acuna, it's Albies, and it's a club option on Will Smith that they obviously could move on from if they wanted to. We all like it if Freeman was on the team. There's other guys that you want to lock up eventually, but they don't have a ton of salary committed. And the two guys that have long-term, like you referenced there, are deals that we all expect to be very favorable to the team. So, I don't know. Freeman was on my list to ask you about, so we'll just do it now. I have no idea what the number is going to end up being if they even get the deal done. I feel like I'm confident that they're going to figure something out because they don't want him to hit the market. But it's going to be, I think you mentioning $100 million is probably right. Even if it's only 3 years, like how about 3 for $100 for Freddie Freeman? Is that even going to be, I have no idea. Honestly, like length, especially in this weird market, like how many years do you want to give Freddie Freeman? I don't know, but it's going to be a lot of money regardless.
I'm also curious if he wants to potentially come back home, because the Angels are going to have the Pujols contract coming off the books after 21. And Freeman, of course, from Southern California. That's been rumored as a potential fit forever. So he might want to get to free agency. He might not want to get a possible extension done. And if something like that happens, what kind of contract could he get there to potentially price him out of the Braves' range? So it's really a situation where it might not even be in the team's hands right now.
Yeah, there's always a give and take. It's a good reminder because, you know, fans want the guy to stay, and I think Freddie probably likes it with the Braves. He's been the guy for a long time. They live here year round, all that stuff. But it's not a one-way street. The guy might have other intentions, and Freddie might want to stay long-term. He's always said the right things about staying long-term, but you're not going to get, I think I said this on the recent podcast as well, but you're not going to get a discount on Freddie here. I don't think. Maybe you will in terms of what he might get in free agency, but it's not going to, like, he's going to sign a deal for $15 million a year. It's just not going to happen. He's going to sign for a lot of money on an annual basis, and I'm fine with him doing that because he is that good and should age reasonably well. But it's not going to be a number where we all come out on podcasts and write about a number that looks like it's incredibly team-friendly, I don't think.
Yeah, I don't think there's going to be a discount here at all. This isn't like a Chipper Jones situation where he, you know, grew up regionally and grew up as a fan of the team and was like embedded in his DNA from day one or something like that. I think it's a situation where, you know, I think he wants to stay, but I don't think he's going to take a below market less than he can possibly get on free agency contract just to do it. I think he's I think he knows how much he's worth, and he's going to want a contract that essentially pays him what he's worth.
Yeah, for sure. Okay. So outside of that, I wanted to ask you, like I did with pitching, before we get to names, is there a position other than corner outfield where we all have talked about forever? Like, would you look at third base? Like, where do you feel about Austin Riley? That's kind of the only natural other spot to really examine, but how does this roster shape up for you in terms of what you're actually looking to add or bolster this offseason? Because if Ozuna walks, you have a clear hole or two in the outfield or DH, and then you also have third base. That's kind of it in terms of needs.
I think you need another outfielder no matter what, because on the 40-man right now, you've got, I want to say, four plus Duvall, who still theoretically could be non-tendered.
And Ender.
Really, yeah. Ender, who, you know, he's getting his money no matter what. You have Abraham Almonte, who, I mean, probably is going to feature and significantly this year. Acuna, who obviously is... pencil him in lead off for the next 8 years, playing one of the outfield positions, and Christian Pache, who looked great in the playoffs, but are they really going to give him a starting role next year? Really not sure on that yet. So I think no matter what, you're going to need to look at an outfielder, whether or not there's going to be a DH, whether or not you are able to bring Ozuna back. And then there's the third base question. I mean, I don't know what we've learned from Riley yet. He has 500 plate appearances in his career. He's been overall a poor hitter, but over the two seasons, he's been a poor hitter in two different ways. Each has kind of had its ups. Each has had its downs. I mean, when you put the ups together, it's like an all-star. But when you put the downs together, it's a guy who shouldn't even be in the majors. So I think next year is going to be a big season for him. But I think they're going to roll out Riley for another full season and see what ends up happening there.
Yeah, I think so, too. And I personally would not hesitate to acquire someone at third base over him. But I think it would probably need to be someone that you knew was going to be good. Like, if Chris Bryant is a guy that's on the radar, as everyone always talks about, that's the kind of guy where you could do it. But you're not going to just go out and spend money on a free agent third baseman, I don't think, with Riley. I think you're going to give him another chance. I've never been the biggest Riley guy in the world, but it does seem like they're going to give him one more shot at this and then have that be the make or break season in the upcoming year. I agree with you on the outfield as well. They have to do something there. I guess it's a natural segue. Other guys you're looking at, Ozuna is almost in his own category right now because of his hybrid DH nature and the fact that he was already on the team last year, but take him out of it. Is there anybody that you're looking at that you think is a particularly good fit? Because there's names that you always hear.
Yeah, I mean, Michael Brantley is the name that everyone always says. And yep. I think he would be a great fit, especially since he'd probably only get a 1-2-3 year deal. I don't think it would be something long term that would really kind of block someone or lock the position down for a long time. But I mean, aside from him and George Springer, who is assume he's out of the Braves price range, you look at the rest of these guys, and I mean, a lot of them are like older or all glove or platoon. There's really just not a lot of guys there that I could see like playing like 140 games a season for the team.
Yeah, the other popular one, I agree. You know, Brantley's the natural one, and that's one that I'd use as well. He'd be good. He's a good hitter. He's proven all that stuff. The other name that you hear the most probably is Jock Peterson. I think in part because he could kind of platoon with Duvall in a little bit, and also he's just kind of a famous player that has power and all that stuff. But it's not like there's a huge laundry list of guys who you know can be an everyday good player in the outfield that's available in terms of free agency. You could trade for a guy as well. But if you're going to sign someone planning to play them every day, Brantley's the only guy that I'm, other than Springer, who, again, like you said, is probably out of the price range. Brantley is the one that probably best combines the price tag and also the ability to just, like, not worry about him. I mean, there's some durability stuff there, I guess. But other than that, he's just good. So maybe that's the one that I guess what I'm saying is there's a reason why he's the guy everybody mentions.
Yeah, and another guy that kind of fits into that boat, I think, is Adam Eaton.
Yep.
From the Nationals, who really wasn't good at all last year. But I think he could be had on, like, a nice little one-year pillow contract, kind of bounce back. But at the same time, he kind of has a lot of the Inciarte kind of like qualities about him. So I'm not sure if adding a guy like that to the outfield mix would really be a great thing overall.
Yeah, I mean, what happens with Ender in your mind? We spent some time on this on a couple of shows ago about Ender, and we're all guessing. But what do you think is like the most likely resolution to that? Because he is going to get the money regardless.
Yeah, he's going to get the money. I think it's going to be a situation where he's packaged for maybe another bad contract somewhere. We don't see that too often in baseball, but we did see it with that crazy Dodgers swap. We saw it with that Indians trade with, Swisher and Chris Johnson and Michael Bourne. That was kind of ugly.
The one that I bring up is the one that got Tukey to Atlanta from Arizona.
Well, that was like a straight prospect buy, man. That was... Yeah. That was a straight up NBA style trade.
It was.
I don't think I could see the Braves essentially giving up a prospect that is at least slightly touted just to dump nearly $10 million.
I would hope not, because that's just bad business. But that's a way to do it if they were just desperate. If Liberty said, look, here's your hard and fast salary cap, Alex, for this year, and there was no other way to do it, that's a way that you could. I agree, it's not the greatest idea in the world. You do not want to use prospect capital to get off money in the way that they did there with Arizona, but that is an option, if you want to call it that.
You could also use a trade like that to theoretically clear 40 mound spots. I think it was another Dodgers trade where we saw the Braves acquire Juan Uribe for three guys on the 40-man that probably weren't long-term assets, and none of them ended up really doing all that much, but it, you know, cleared some of the roster spots away, got something of a little bit of value in return for the Braves, and it ended up being, I don't know, it at least helped turn the roster a little bit more. I think we could see something like that with one of these guys who probably isn't going to be a long-term asset, just to kind of like get him and Inciarte to a place where they could maybe play a little more, get them off the 40-man, and just move on in that direction.
What is the percentage chance in your mind that Ender Inciarte plays another game for the Braves on the field?
I'll say 65%, actually.
So pretty high. I mean, that's the thing. I've been saying, and that's higher than I even think, but I've been saying the whole time, everyone's assuming that he's just gone, and it's just like, look, guys, it's not as easy as everyone thinks it is to get off that money. And there is an argument, anyway, to just bring Ender back as the fifth outfielder, the most overpaid fifth outfielder in the world, but just have him be on the team for insurance. If you get an injury or two, you can roll him out there. He probably won't be good, but that might be preferable, especially if the deal is, you know, trying to get off him with some serious pain. You could be better off just saving that roster spot and making him your 26th man or whatever.
Yeah, and I mean, when you look at the situation and think, like, who would you rather have as your 4th/5th/6th outfielder, him or a guy like Almonte, knowing you're going to have to pay Inciarte no matter what, I mean, wouldn't you lean for Ender?
Well, here's the thing. Before, I'm sure you might even get there too, but the problem is no one trusts that Snicker won't play him. I would hope that that's the case, but you know what I mean? That is a concern that I've heard from Braves fans, and the one that I would at least kind of share is that if he's on the team, there is the threat that he could just play too much.
And that is why you have to make sure that, like, he has better options. You have to try to, like, Snitker-proof the team.
Yeah. I mean, it's been the case with, obviously, the other guy that we talk about with this, Markakis, at times, in that if you have him on the team, Snit is going to play him. And that's the concern. I guess Markakis is the other guy who's a free agent we could at least briefly discuss. We all know the deal on that, I think, but... any interest in bringing him back again, if it's you, Joe?
I don't think there is really any chance of that happening, just because he really wasn't, you know, that much of a factor this season. He came back, he hit that big walk-off homer that I predicted 10 minutes before, and and aside from that, I can't think of one thing he did that was in any way memorable. It was really a forgettable season, and, like, even a lot of the guys that were, like, super pro Markakis weren't constantly talking him up and saying he should be in the lineup every day. The end of the season, he was a platoon player. He was a guy that wasn't playing every day, and he shouldn't have been playing every day.
Yeah, that's for sure. Before I let you get out of here, I do want to ask you for one maybe bold prediction. Give me something that you think will happen, and obviously we are likely to be wrong on these, but something that the Braves are going to do in your mind in the next 3-4 months, roster-wise. Anything bold out there that you think is going to happen?
I honestly have no idea how the league itself is going to shake out, but I'm going to say, weirdly enough, that they're not going to non-tender anyone before the arb deadline in a couple weeks.
Which means so Camargo will get a deal under that circumstance, under that prism?
Camargo, Bloop, Jackson, and Dayton, I think, are all going to get contracts, just because, I mean, they're not too expensive. It's not a situation where they're making, you know, $7 million projected or something like that. They're really cheap salaries, and they have some sort of roles with the team going forward, even if they're not good enough. They have potential roles there that you could fill, but you wouldn't necessarily get an upgrade for what you'd be paying.
I will guess that one of them does not. I'm not sure who it is between Camargo and Luke Jackson that won't get tendered, but I'm going to guess one of them doesn't. So we should bet like a lemonade on this at some point. I don't drink, that's why I said lemonade, but whenever there's not a pandemic, I'll buy you dinner or something if I'm wrong on that one.
Yeah, when everyone's back at SunTrust in like 3 years.
Yeah. By the way, not SunTrust anymore. Truist Park, Joe. I know you don't live here anymore or ever, but Truist Park.
Yeah, I'm not calling it Truist Park.
That's fine. I understand. Ridiculous. Trust me, I called it SunTrust for like the first 6 months without even remembering. I wasn't even trying to do like a bit. I just kept forgetting that was what it was called, but Truist Park. Well, thank you, Joe, for doing this, as always. Anything that you wanted to get off your chest, feel free to do so. And if not, please plug what you got going on. You are a very busy man editing content, writing content, so please share everything that you got going there.
Yeah, I mean, I really don't have much going on right now. Over at Awful Announcing, we just posted our yearly NFL broadcaster rankings, which are a source of great labor and frustration for me every year, so I'm glad that's done. But I mean, this week I'm taking off after Tuesday and not really going anywhere, just relaxing for the holidays that I will not be celebrating. And yeah, it's going to be good.
A good time. Did you share your Twitter account just now? I can't remember if you said it out loud.
Oh, Twitter. Share it. Joe_TOC. Follow me for complaining about my very depressing sports teams.
Yeah, Joe and I both had equally, maybe not equally, but frustrating Sunday afternoons with our NFL teams. I'm a Falcons fan, of course, and Joe is a Ravens fan, so didn't go well for the Ravens today.
But hey, shout out to the Northwestern Wildcats, who are going to the Big Ten title game again.
They are much better than Michigan, I'll tell you that right now. No question about that. So, All right, Joe. Well, thank you for doing this, man. We will talk soon, I am sure. I'll bug you once again to come on this podcast. Everybody else, please subscribe to the show. Check out the previous episodes with myself and Scott and Eric, etc. And we'll see you all next time.
Vacations can be tricky. You already know how to book flights and hotels, but now the only thing you're missing is, you know, the actual travel experience. Because is it really a vacation if you're just sitting around like you would at home? You need a tool to get the most out of your time away. That's where Viator steps in. You can book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected. And 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
More to-dos, less time, and an infinite number of tools to keep track of. Sometimes doing business has never felt harder, but you don't need a miracle to hit your goals. You can just use HubSpot, because their all-in-one customer platform can make growing your business infinitely easier. Imagine this: high-quality leads, fast closing deals, wildly happy customers, and more benchmark-breaking quarters. It's not a miracle, it's HubSpot. Visit HubSpot.com to get started today.
Claude 3 from Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. With models at every point of the price-performance curve, you no longer have to make trade-offs between intelligence, speed, and cost. Claude 3 Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence. Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skill and speed. And Haiku is the fastest and lowest-cost model on the market, perfectly designed for high-volume, high-speed use cases. Join the thousands of enterprises who use Anthropic to navigate this new frontier. Visit anthropic.com/Claude, C-L-A-U-D-E, today. Jumpstart your genius with Claude 3 by Anthropic.